And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana University basketball news and discussion. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Podcast on the Brink is a joint production of the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. For complete coverage of IU basketball, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com. Hey, so you might have heard about Blue Apron. That's the meal service company where they send you meals each week and they send you all the ingredients so it's ready to cook. Well, if you've been thinking about trying Blue Apron, go to insidethehall.com/blueapron and find out details for how you can get $30 off of your first order. And if you're interested in learning more and want to hear about my personal experience using Blue Apron, stick around for the end of this episode and I will share that story with you. And again, that URL is insidethehall.com/blueapron. On this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink, I am joined by Alex Bozich, founder of Inside the Hall, fresh off his trip to Columbus to watch Indiana's game against Ohio State. And we react to that game a little bit. I've actually got some burning questions for Alex that I wanted to ask him, and so that's why it's just us talking. We talk about Indiana's struggles on the back ends of these back-to-backs. We talk about Devontae Green. Is it time to play the young guys? And we also talk about Romeo Langford a little bit. Alex had a chance to talk to Romeo's dad, Tim, and I get his impressions of that, and if it feels like there's any momentum here going in Indiana's favor. All of that and more on this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy, and that is with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There is nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person. And SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. I can vouch that it is by far the easiest way that I have found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. I'm planning on doing that with my wife. We have a 17-month-old, but we're planning some date nights out. And one of the things we're going to do is look for some musicians that we want to see. And SeatGeek will be the first place that we go to look for concert tickets here in Dallas where we live. So hopefully we can find some, because we know if they're there and if there are good prices, then we will find them on SeatGeek. Because SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and help you find amazing deals. And best of all, Podcast on the Brink listeners get $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code BRINK today, B-R-I-N-K, for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. I'm joined this week on Podcast on the Brink, as I usually am, by Alex Bozich. Alex, I've got some burning questions coming off of Indiana's third straight defeat from up there in Columbus. So what do you say just you and I kind of bat some topics back and forth today?
That would be terrific. There's obviously a lot to talk about. Kind of seems like this season's had some ebbs and flows here. There's the stretch there where Indiana played well and got some really good Big Ten wins, and now things have gone into a rut. So interested to obviously get your thoughts as well on some of the developments here over the last couple weeks. But it's been a tough three-game stretch here for Indiana. It doesn't get any easier, obviously, with Michigan State coming in on Saturday and then another one-day turnaround, which I know the schedule is one thing we're going to dig into here pretty quickly.
Yeah. The thing about these last two games is I don't think anybody really expected Indiana to beat Purdue or Ohio State, and not a lot of people are expecting them to beat Michigan State. It would have been nice if you could have picked off one of those, and Indiana gave themselves a chance against Purdue. I mean, I think it's really difficult to look at that game in hindsight, and I mean, it was like this right when the game was over, and not be impressed with how Indiana played for the vast majority of that game, and you got beat by a better team that was better at executing than you down the stretch, and they've got guys who have been in the same system for 4 years, so that's not, you know, a crazy thing to have happen. But when you look at what has happened over the last kind of week here, it really makes that Illinois loss sting even more. Because if you had found a way to get that win, and that's a team that, I mean, they're both right about the same place in KenPom, but Indiana really started out well in that game, had the chance to win if they just, you know, don't turn the ball over quite as much and make a few free throws. You know, now, yeah, you've lost two in a row, but they're games that you kind of figured you would lose. You had played well against Purdue, but you're still 6-5, head above water with Michigan State coming in. And now you can, you know, maybe get to two games over 500 of Big Ten play with a win. But it just feels a lot different now being at 5-6 instead, having lost that Illinois game. So I just kind of in hindsight, and that loss stung at the time, but it kind of stings even more now, given that Indiana wasn't able to pick up a surprise win over Purdue or Ohio State.
Yeah, I think that loss, more than anything, the way they lost was the most frustrating thing for a lot of people. The amount of free throws they missed, the fact that they had a, you know, a pretty solid lead in that game in the first half and really couldn't extend it out any further. Purdue, in a lot of ways, you know, Indiana did get that 10-point lead, which is the first time somebody had led by double figures against Purdue since their IUPUI game. So that just kind of shows you how good Purdue's been over the course of the season. They're not really a team that you would expect Indiana to step on their neck when they're down 10. You know, they're going to make a run. They're going to come back. They're a legitimate team that's going to potentially make a deep run in, you know, into March. But with Illinois, that was a game that Indiana just kind of shot itself in the foot in terms of the things they did to let Illinois back in the game, not extending the lead out in the first half, missing, I think it was 13 free throws, the amount of turnovers they had, and they were still right there. And so I agree with you. That's really a loss that's going to, you know, probably prevent them from having a chance to get, you know, a 500 record in the Big Ten. But you also look at kind of what this team's done so far in Big Ten play. Can't say I'm super surprised at where they are. I mean, they've won some games, obviously, that they should have won. They've lost maybe that Illinois game that they shouldn't have lost. But overall, I think they're record-wise right where probably most of us expected, at least when Big Ten play started, after what we saw early in the year against Indiana State and some of the other losses they had. I mean, this is just a team that has a lot of flaws. It's a team that I still think has gotten better as the season has gone along, but there's obviously a lot of things that this team's just simply not going to be able to overcome at all this year.
Yeah. So let me ask you about the schedule, because Archie is being asked about this all the time, and he's doing his best to, I guess, be realistic about it and realistic about the challenge that it is, while not making it an excuse and acknowledging that everybody's dealing with schedule challenges. But the reality is that Indiana's dealing with one of the more difficult schedules in the Big Ten, just given the amount of back-to-backs that they have. And when you combine that then with some of the injuries and the depth issues, you know, it kind of exacerbates it. So, you know, Archie has to kind of choose his words carefully. We can be perhaps maybe a little bit more candid about it. How much of an impact do you think the schedule is having here on some of these struggles over the past few games? You know, Indiana plays Maryland. It's a tough 40-minute game. They grind it out. They come out and start out well against Illinois, but then kind of fade there toward the end of the game. And then Tuesday night against Ohio State, you're coming off a really emotional game against Purdue where you give yourself a chance to win. You don't. You've got the crowd behind you. And now you got to turn right around, really no practice time, and go to Ohio State. And Indiana just came out, looked really flat, similar to how they did against Michigan earlier this year coming off the Duke game. And even though that was a little bit of a longer turnaround than this one was, and really that game was over, I mean, in the first 10 minutes, it was, I think, 25-10, and the final, you know, the final deficit was 15. So Indiana kind of played them even. Ohio State just kind of put it on cruise control after that. Is that, are you starting to see in these last two road games maybe the effect of the schedule combined with some of the depth issues as being an issue? Or do you look at it as, you know, the schedule just is what it is, and that's not something to take into account too much with some of these struggles?
I definitely saw it more in the Ohio State game. I mean, it was, what, 10 minutes in, and you knew the game was over pretty much. There wasn't much hope for Indiana to rally in that game. And a lot of it was, to me, they looked a little bit depleted in terms of their energy. They were settling for a lot of contested shots early in the shot clock, and that stretch where Ohio State kind of took over the game. And just didn't have their normal energy defensively. So, Archie is obviously not going to come out and make an excuse for anything. That's just not his style, and nor should he. But I was listening to Chris Holtman's post-game press conference as I was sitting in the back in the arena. They had it playing up on the big screen, and he was asked about kind of the schedule, and he said he thought Indiana looked tired and that their legs were a little bit depleted. So, another coach is never going to want to, kind of put down their opponent and make a win not seem as great as possible. But I thought it was interesting that Holtman shared that observation. And he's obviously well aware of what these teams are going through this year with the schedule. And, the most concerning thing to me for the long-term health of the league overall is, a lot of people are, citing the Big Ten tournament being moved up a week as the reason for this schedule. But when you look at the fact that they took two games out, from early December, played those, to get them out of the, the regular schedule. So we're only really playing 16 games here between beginning of January to the end of February. And, the real reason, in my opinion, that the schedule is what it is the addition of Fox to the TV schedule. And Indiana has been hurt a little bit more than some other schools, I think, because they're one of the more desirable TV, teams. And basically all these games are now being set by the TV schedule. So now we're going to have a situation in the coming years where it's going to go to a 20-game schedule. You've got a league that's basically playing every day of the week. I think there needs to be some kind of advocate for the Big Ten coaches to say, there was four teams this year that, if you count the one-day turnaround in the beginning of December, played four such turnarounds in Big Ten play. That's too many, particularly when you look at Indiana's case. All three that they have here in this stretch, they played Maryland, then they went to Illinois. They played Purdue, and then went to Ohio State. And then this coming weekend, they're going to play Michigan State and then go to Rutgers. That's brutal to have three of those in a row like this. And then every time the second game is on the road. So I'm actually a little bit more looking at big picture. I know everyone's concerned with the now and with, the season, how things are going. I'm more interested to see how this plays out long term with the Big Ten. If they're going to go to a 20-game schedule, they've got to figure out a way to make this schedule work for the teams, because the last thing you want to do, especially for a league that hasn't won a national championship since 2000, is to run your teams ragged throughout the conference season. And by the end of the season, what are they going to have left? So I think it's really going to be fascinating to see how this all plays out. I'm sure the coaches do not like all of these one-day breaks. And, I don't know how fans feel about it. I don't know how you feel about it as somebody that watches the games from home, Jared. But it just kind of seems weird that early in, January, there was a lot of stretches where Indiana, they had 3 or 4 days off. And now all of a sudden, it's just like rapid fire, two games in 3 days all the time. It's just really kind of bizarre how this has all worked out.
As someone who hosts a post game show after each of these games, I'm not a big fan. I like a little bit more buffer zone between those games. But hold on a second. Are you trying to suggest that money is so important that it would dictate decision making that is not necessarily in the best interests of student athletes and the institutions and even perhaps the sport itself? Are you saying money is that important? Because that is flabbergasting.
That is exactly what I'm saying. And,
Pete Bell.
I didn't like the Friday night Big Ten games. I probably could have lived with Monday, but now there's a Big Ten game literally every day of the week. And I realize that it's kind of the deal now because Fox has been brought into the mix, but now you've got games on CBS, you've got games on all the ESPN properties, you've got games on Fox National, and you've got games on FS1 in addition to Big Ten Network. So all these different entities are saying, we want Indiana games, we want Michigan State games, we want Wisconsin games, and we need them on these days. And my fear is this is not something that's going to be a one-year thing. Everyone thinks it's just because the Big Ten tournament was moved up a week, and I don't think that's the case, especially when it's going to go to 20 games. So yeah. I think something's going to have to change here, because there's, as I said, four teams that had these ridiculous turnarounds, three in that what I like to call the actual meat of the schedule, you know, throw out December. But when there was four teams that had three of these one-day turnarounds, and there was a couple that had none. So.
Yeah, at the very least, you got to balance that. But right. As you're saying, TV can make that impossible. If, you know, if the networks want such and such team, that might make it difficult to balance it like that. So,
and I don't know how it works, and maybe that's something we could do in the off season, is maybe try to get somebody on from the Big Ten to talk about it, or somebody that's more familiar with the industry, just to kind of talk about it. But my guess, and this is, again, this is me guessing, is when this stuff's all divvied up, there's some kind of there's a significant input, in my opinion, from the TV networks to say, hey, you know, we out of the 18 games that we are gonna that Indiana plays in Big Ten play, we want six of them, and these are the dates we have. And then it's kind of a puzzle that has to be put together. And what I'm saying is, from an Indiana perspective, and from, you know, every other team's perspective in the league, there needs to be some kind of guidelines on how this is done, because it can't just continue to be a wild, wild west like this for every season, because, you know, it's just not, you know, it's not fair to me, in my opinion, for those four teams to have this many of these occurrences. It's just not conducive to being successful.
I agree. Well, and, you know, in particular for why it might be an extra challenge for Indiana this season, is this Indiana team, obviously we know how much they struggle to shoot, and we're going to talk about free throws here in a minute, because I got a question for you about that. But, you know, they struggle to capitalize at the free throw line. They struggle to make threes. Everything seems so hard for this team offensively. And when you have trouble scoring and you've got to basically play max effort, you know, to compete and win some of these games, I know that, you know, we all want to say, you know, these are college kids, they should be able to play 100% all out, 40 minutes every game, all that stuff. At some point, it does kind of wear on you mentally when it's so hard to score, and then you're, you know, you got a quick turnaround like this. So, you know, I don't want to make too many excuses, but I do think that there is an explanation here embedded in the scheduling and the combination of what this team is kind of made up of right now, both in how they play and who they have playing. That makes it a real challenge for them. And obviously they weren't able to overcome it against Illinois and Ohio State. Hopefully they are for that game against Rutgers, because I think that's a really important game headed down the final stretch to get a win there and try to build some momentum, because then you've got a stretch of winnable games. But, you know, I just think how hard it is for this team to score. It makes it extra hard when you have some of these games condensed like that. It sure would be nicer if you just, you know, make some threes, it'd be a little bit easier, but that's just not how this team is constructed.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked all season about when are they going to start making threes at a better percentage, and when are they going to start making free throws, and we're far enough into the season now where I think we can safely answer that neither of those things are going to get significantly better. Could they have a game where they come out and make, you know, 9 of 14 on threes? Absolutely. But I think what we've seen to this point is what we're going to get the rest of the way, and the margin for error is so slim, and you have guys like Juwan Morgan and Robert Johnson playing such vital roles and playing such heavy minutes. If they're not getting any help, I mean, they're having to go out and almost win these games single-handedly a lot of times, and that's just not the way you win at this level.
Yep. All right, Alex, I have got some more burning questions for you. We will get to those here in a second. I do want to take a quick minute here and remind everybody to go to HoosierProud.com, and there are a lot of reasons why you should go there, the most important of which, of course, is that they have some great designs at HoosierProud.com, and when you're talking about an apparel company and a website where you can buy t-shirts and sweatshirts and that kind of thing, the designs are the most important thing. And so when you go to HoosierProud.com, you will, of course, find the Inside the Hall t-shirt. So if you want to support Inside the Hall and show your affinity for the wonderful website that Alex has built, you can get those t-shirts there. But you can also get their officially licensed IU gear, which includes basketball-themed shirts and football-themed shirts and soccer-themed shirts. And in particular, I like the long-sleeved Script Indiana shirt. It's in crimson. I got it over winter break. I really, really like that shirt. And then, you know, if you don't want to get a shirt that's affiliated with a particular school, and they do have other schools there too besides just Indiana, they have a bunch of designs that are inspired by unique elements of the Hoosier State. So you can browse those, pick up some of those t-shirts. When you do, this is another reason to go there, you will be supporting Indiana-based charities, because our friends at Hoosier Proud are committed to supporting Indiana-based charities. And so a portion of the proceeds from their t-shirt sales do that. And then the third reason to go is they're very generous with our listeners. So because you listen to Podcast on the Brink, when you use the code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, at checkout, you will get 15% off the entire order. And that's, you know, it's not just if you get the Inside the Hall shirt or just one shirt. Everything that you put into your shopping cart, when you check out, use that code, you will get 15% off. So again, the promo code is BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, and the website is HoosierProud.com. So, Alex, kind of piggybacking on what we just talked about, for a team that struggles so much to score, it sure would help if they could make free throws. And, you know, one thing that has improved for Indiana this year is free throw rate. The Hoosiers are getting to the line better, and that's, you know, it's been a hallmark of Archie Miller teams. But the free throw shooting is atrocious. Indiana shooting 65.3% from the free throw line. To give you some context, they are 326th in the country in free throw percentage. That's almost as bad as they are shooting threes, where they're 333rd in the country. So a real double whammy right there. But here's what I want to ask you about, because, look, you can maybe look at it as, okay, you know, we just have kind of a bad free throw shooting team. This will all correct itself. I haven't, you know, done any deep research, and I don't know if, you know, John Gassaway or Ken Pomeroy or Bart Torvik or any of these guys have done any research on how much of an influence a coach has on free throw percentage. But if you go back and look at Archie's time at Dayton, most of his teams, outside of his first team at Dayton, which was really good from the free throw line, all of his teams after that, I think, were 180th or worse in the country in free throw percentage. And a lot of times they were deep in the 200s. And that was combined with a really high free throw rate. So they were getting to the line, but they weren't necessarily capitalizing. In 2017, they were 10th in free throw rate, but 215th in free throw percentage. 2016, 75th in free throw rate, but 293rd in free throw percentage. 2015, 4th in free throw rate, 208th in free throw percentage. So you can kind of see where I'm going here. You know, on the one hand, guys who can bang down low and get to the free throw line might not always necessarily be the best free throw shooters. And that seemed to be the case at Dayton, where Kendall Pollard was a really important player for Archie, but not a good free throw shooter. So he took a lot of free throws, didn't make a lot of them, and that kind of brought down the percentages. But are you at all concerned that there is anything systemic with how Archie does things, or that this just isn't a big focus for him, that this free throw issue is going to be something we're going to have to deal with for many years? Or do you look at this as, look, let's just back off a little bit. It's his first year. Let's, you know, let's move forward and hope that it gets corrected and you're not as concerned about it from the long term.
So it's a lot to process.
Sorry,
a lot of good points that you made.
I've been thinking about this a lot, if you can't tell.
I have seen the numbers, and I don't particularly know what to make of them. I don't want to say it's a trend, but, you know, you do look at the teams that he coached at Dayton and you look at this Indiana team, and as a head coach, he hasn't had great free throw shooting teams. However, I think a lot of it could be due to personnel, in terms of just at Dayton not having as skilled, as talented players as maybe he's going to have access to at Indiana, as a reason. Maybe it's going to, you know, improve as the season goes along. Maybe there's some type of fatigue factor involved with, you know, maybe the style that he plays, that these guys are playing so hard all the time. Does that have anything to do with how they shoot from the line? But I don't, you know, I don't really know if there's any takeaway that I can give you that's going to provide any explanation for it, other than wait and see if it's, you know, a trend a season from now. You know, I don't think it's getting better this year. I do think there's a little psychological piece to the struggles with this team, because Archie has brought up the fact that he's noticed, you know, they miss a couple early, and then it almost seems like it's contagious. And I have observed that a little bit, just watching the games up close. It doesn't seem like guys are getting up there and shooting with any confidence. It's almost like they're dreading going to the line a little bit.
So Robert Johnson looks painful sometimes shooting.
Right, right. For me, it's a wait and see. But I also think the more talent you get, the better players that you have, the better you're going to be shooting free throws. It's also a little bit on guys to emphasize and get in the gym and work a little extra on it if you're not shooting well. But I don't know that. I just don't know how much dependent on coaching. And is it a coach's duty to stay after every day and shoot 100 free throws with every play? You know, I don't know exactly like how it works anywhere else or have any frame of reference on how these things usually go. But I would say the main thing to watch going forward, they should have better talent, better players, and better depth maybe, so they're maybe not as reliant on guys to play so many minutes.
Yeah.
Other than that, I think it's obviously a concern at this point, something that bears watching, but I don't know that we can make any big picture judgments right now.
Yeah, and I didn't really see anything else looking at other coaches. Like Jay Wright, for example, at Villanova, they are always good at free throws. I mean, going back to his first season. Then you look at Tom Izzo at Michigan State, and they are all over the place. You know, sometimes they're in the 300, sometimes they're up high. Sean Miller, obviously his brother, you know, they've been in the top 20 the last 2 years, basically in the top 100 four out of the last 5 years. So at least we know it's not like a familial thing, like the Millers just don't believe in free throw shooting.
Well, I mean, a lot of it too is like getting the right person to the line, right?
Yes.
It doesn't do you a lot of good to get a guy 8 or 9 free throw attempts a game if he can only make 40%.
Yep.
And a lot of times this year, Juwan Morgan hasn't shot it particularly well. And I'm not saying Indiana should go to Juwan Morgan less. He's obviously their best player by leaps and bounds. And if they're going to win, they have to have him. But, you know, he's getting to the line a lot and he's not making a great percentage. And so that has a lot to do with where the numbers are. You know, a guy like Devontae Green, I think, is one of the, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but just off the top of my head, he's probably one of the better free throw shooters on the team, but doesn't get to the line as much. So,
yep, he's shooting 73%. Juwan's shooting 64%. So, and,
yeah,
you know, Robert and Josh, Newkirk, they don't get there very much, but their percentages are okay. So, yeah, I mean,
right.
So, okay, that concludes free throw talk. Hopefully that is more than we talk about free throws for the next 10 years combined. But it's been a big issue.
We might have an off-season episode on
maybe
what makes a good free throw shooter, because there's going to be a long off-season and we'll have plenty to talk about.
That's true.
Look for that in late June.
Yes. Yes. Okay, so much more pertinent you know, to what will happen here over these next 7 games. You see a guy like Devontae Green really come out and be one of the few guys against Ohio State that had a positive showing. He's 4 of 5 from downtown. He played 30 minutes and didn't turn it over, which I thought was the most impressive part of his game. I know the 20 points is great, the 4 threes is great, but that is going to come and go for Devontae. And as we've seen, the decision-making comes and goes too, but for him to play that long without turning it over, basically only have one really, really bad shot that he took, it was an impressive performance. I know he struggled late in the Illinois game and made several mistakes, but I thought he also showed some growth in that game and was given a lot of responsibility when basically none of the other guards wanted to step up and handle the ball. He at least did and tried to get Indiana into some things. And so I think now you've had 2 straight road games where he's kind of showing little flickers that maybe the light's starting to go on. And so, and Archie was asked about this last night, if he's going to give Devontae more time. And I liked Archie's response, which was basically, look, if he keeps playing like he did tonight, then he'll earn more time, you know, but we're looking for consistency. And I think the message there is, we're not just going to hand him the keys with no accountability and no standards. He's got to keep earning it. But if he does, he's going to get more time. Do you agree with that approach? And do you generally think now, as you know, Indiana sits here at 12-11, 5-6, you know, hopes for postseason play kind of slipping away, do you think at some point it is time to start playing the younger guys a little bit more? Not necessarily just giving them time without accountability, but maybe if there's a tie between them and an older guy, giving, you know, kind of letting the tiebreaker go to the younger guy to get them experience. Have we reached that point?
You know, I would like to see Green more. The Purdue game was one, obviously, where your margin for error was so little and you couldn't afford turnovers because it was, such a tight game in the second half where maybe he wasn't as comfortable with going with Devontae, where last night the game kind of got away from him a little bit and he gave him, you know, a little bit more of a leash. But at some point, I think guys like Al Durham and Devontae have to start playing with a little bit more consistency if they want to get, you know, sustained playing time. And I think last night was a great step in that direction for Devontae. The biggest thing for him, I think, is just slowing down because he's a talented player. He can do things. But it always seems like he's just in too much of a rush to kind of do something when he gets out there. It's almost like he overcompensates sometimes because, he's maybe looking over his shoulder. Is he going to get pulled out? If he makes a turnover, he's afraid of getting pulled. Now, Archie Miller's a guy that's going to pull you if you make a stupid turnover, but he's got to just play a little bit more under control, a little bit more methodical in his decision-making because... with the way Indiana plays, it's not like it was under Tom Crean where it's get the first shot you can. Let's probe a little bit. Let's move the ball around. Let's try to get the best shot we can. But let's also, take a little time off the clock. It's not a run and gun type of system. And that's, probably how Devontae's been playing for most of his life. So it's an adjustment for him. But I thought he showed a lot more maturity last night. Now, obviously, the game wasn't really ever in question when he was doing a lot of the things that he did, but it's still good experience for him. But in terms of the minutes and how they're distributed, we don't see a lot in practice. Obviously, we don't see any practice. We don't know which guys are putting in extra work. We don't know which guys are playing well in practice. All we have to go by, really, is what we see in the game. So, the guy has a great game like last night, and all of a sudden people are going to be calling for him to play in front of Josh Newkirk. He was asked a question in the press conference last night. I'm not sure if you saw it. Terry Hutchins asked, is it time to start Devontae? And it's like, he has a great game, but the game before he only played 4 minutes total. So it's not like these guys really have the body of work for a coach to have the trust in them to say, hey, you're my guy now. So it's a learning year for all these guys, especially the younger ones. You hate that for Robert Johnson and you hate that for Josh Newkirk because they're seniors and they want to go places. This is their last chance, but these younger guys have to kind of give the coaching staff reasons to believe in them for the future, because there are a lot of new guys coming in next year, obviously. And there's going to be a battle once again for playing time. There's going to be new roles established. And right now, down the stretch, is when they can make an impression to kind of get themselves a little bit more trust from the staff. And to me, this is just my personal opinion. I think Devontae Green, for the long-term future of Indiana, is important because right now, I'm not seeing a ton of guard depth in the future on next year's roster. As it stands today,
yeah.
I see Devontae Green, I see Al Durham, and I see Robert Fennessy as guards on this team next year. Now, could that change with certain decisions that could be made in the next couple of months? Obviously, could Indiana be looking at a grad transfer? Could they be looking at another player to come in? Absolutely. But they need guards for next year, and Devontae Green's a talented player. If he can ever kind of bottle up the good things about his game and kind of just become a little bit more disciplined with his game-to-game approach and kind of how he makes decisions out there, I think he can be a good player. Now, there's a lot of, he's, to me, I've noticed he's one of the more polarizing guys among fans to discuss. People on Twitter are either saying, get him out of there, play him more. People on the forum are debating whether or not he should play at all or whether he should play more. I think a lot of that comes with, in a lot of ways, he's kind of like, the old good Troy, bad Troy analogy we have with Troy Williams for all those years. He's either playing really good or he's playing poorly. So, to me, he's a key guy here down the stretch. If he can do things like last night more often, then Indiana's a better team.
It's got to be frustrating for Archie, too, not in a way that he would admit, but to have been such a successful guard, and I'm sure have very specific ideas on how guard play should go, to have mm-hmm. four guards, all of whom have offensive efficiency ratings under 100, and that's just kind of a very... it's just a benchmark. 100 is not even great. I mean, that's just maybe average. And all those guys are under that. So, I mean, in a way, he's kind of damned if he does and damned if he doesn't a little bit, because his options at guard, like, there's just nothing consistent. And some games, Josh Newkirk shows up and plays well. Other games, he's a non-factor. Devontae, the same thing, and Al Durham, really hasn't shown anything consistently. And then you even have Robert Johnson, who has some games like last night where he struggles. So, it's a difficult decision for Archie to have to make, because I don't think, outside of Robert Johnson, you just don't really have an option there that you can count on. So trying to say, like, this guy should start this game, I'm sure Archie would love to have a good idea who it should be. But from game to game, I mean, I'm not sure if he has any better idea than we do, how those guys are going to come out and play.
I agree with all that.
So, all right, let's move on, and let's talk about, you mentioned what the guards look like for Indiana next year. Robert Phinisee, Al Durham, and Devontae Green. We know those guys will be here. A guy that we're hoping will be there and maybe make scoring a little bit easier, because it's what he does, is Romeo Langford. And you had the chance to talk with his dad, Tim, and put up a Q&A over at InsideTheHall.com. We'll put it in the show notes for this episode. Definitely recommend that people read that if you haven't. Let me ask it to you this way. It kind of felt to me, reading that, like maybe there was a hint of momentum in Indiana's direction. And it's really hard to try and kind of parse the words and read between what the Langfords say, because they play it so close to the vest. But I thought, and also he's talking to an Indiana-centric, reporter, obviously, so he's going to be thinking more along the lines of Indiana, and they were just up there for the game. But it kind of felt like there were some positives in the direction of Indiana in some of the comments that he made. Is that kind of how you perceived it, too?
The number one thing I took away is that they're paying very close attention. They are not... they're not reading box scores. They're not reading, AP stories on how the game went. They're watching the games.
Are they listening to
post-game
shows?
I don't know. I don't think they're looking. I think they're watching with, very closely at how things are going. I thought it was notable that Mr. Langford told me that Romeo told him that he thought Archie got the most out of his guys, and it was a good game, obviously, for him to visit for, because they beat Northwestern pretty handily when he was there in the building. And, I've obviously gotten to know Mr. Langford pretty well. I've just kind of learned that reading into anything in recruiting, especially in this situation, is basically just taking a leap of into guessing and speculating. Yeah. And so, I think what's going to happen here is kind of what they've said from the beginning. It was interesting to me that he acknowledged the possibility of a decision at the McDonald's game, but he didn't tie himself down to that, obviously. And, I think we're probably still a couple of months out from knowing. April is still the targeted timetable for a decision here, and what happens over the next couple of months could have a little bit to do with that. I'm sure they have some ideas in their head of kind of what they're thinking, where they're leaning. They're not going to tell anyone, obviously. In a lot of ways, the way this has all been handled reminds me a little bit of the Cody Zeller situation, where he was down to three schools as well. He took his visits. He watched the schools. He made a decision based on kind of how he felt, what was the best fit for him. And I think that's how this is going to go as well. They're very focused, obviously, on the New Albany season, which, has a chance to be another run to the state championship game. They came up short last year, but I think they have a great shot to get back this year. And Romeo is just a different kid in turn. I think it's a good thing, because he doesn't let any of this get to him. He's, after the game ends, he comes out of the locker room, he talks to the media, he talks to the people there at New Albany that gather every game to basically just have a chance to get a couple of seconds, a couple of minutes with them, to get an autograph, to have their kid pose for a picture. He realizes that these are very much once in a lifetime opportunities for a lot of these young kids. This is something that they're always going to remember, no matter if Romeo turns out to be, you know, an NBA All-Star, or if, you know, he never makes it to the NBA. I mean, people have, the thing that's hard for people to understand that aren't from New Albany, and I guess this gives me a unique perspective on this because I was born in New Albany. I graduated from New Albany in 2000. There's really never been anything like this in this part of Southern Indiana. There's been some great players obviously come through here. You know, Pat Graham with the Floyd Central, Sharon Wilkerson, won Mr. Basketball, went to Jeff, and obviously things didn't turn out well for him at IU. But this is just a different situation altogether because of, one, how humble this kid is, two, how good he is, and three, how he handles everything. It's just really been cool for me to see. You know, anytime there's been a game, basically, and there hasn't been a conflict of IU, I've been going just because I realize there's never going to be anything like this again. And there's so many people I talk to that want to know where he's going. And I hope ultimately that he makes the best decision for him and that wherever he goes, people support him, because this is not a situation where there's a kid who's strung anybody along. This is not a situation where a kid has just, you know, kind of kept Indiana in the mix. So for the optics of it, you know, I think this is a situation where he's really trying to figure out what he wants to do. And I think wherever he goes, he's going to end up being terrific. People should still follow him to see how his career turns out. Obviously, it'd be great for Indiana fans if he ends up in Bloomington, but I'm just impressed with how the family's handled all this, because there's a lot of situations you can point to with great players who have let things get to their head. You let the wrong people get involved. You're going to prep schools, and then before you know it, you know, 5 years from now, you're playing in Europe somewhere, and you wonder where it went wrong. And I don't think that's going to be the case with Romeo Langford because of the way that they've handled this. And that's a credit to his parents, and also a credit to him, because, you know, it'd be easy for him to feel like, hey, I've made it. I'm going to go play my 1 year in college, and then I'm going to be in the NBA. And that's just not how he's approaching it. He's continuing to get better, and he's just been a really great thing for the city of New Albany. So it's been a lot of fun to watch.
That's a great answer. Thank you for the insight. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, he's such a terrific player, and I haven't had the chance to, you know, watch a full game or watch him up close like you have, but just you watch the highlights, you hear what people like you say about him. And I mean, he sounds like the kind of guy that you want wearing the cream and crimson, you know, but I think about him like I think about all guys. I mean, selfishly, I want every great player to come to Indiana, but these are 17, 18-year-old guys making a really important decision for their future. And if Indiana isn't the right fit, I wouldn't want them choosing Indiana. You know, I want them going where they want to go. And especially a guy like Romeo, I mean, you know, he's a Hoosier. I don't live in Indiana anymore, but I still consider myself a Hoosier. And he's a guy that I'm going to watch and cheer for, you know, no matter where he goes, because I think he's shined a really great light on high school basketball in the state of Indiana. And that's something that's still special to a lot of us. And that's why I think, especially a guy like him, you know, for Indiana fans, you want him to come to Indiana, but he really seems like the kind of guy that if he doesn't, you know, you wish him well and you root him on wherever he goes. So,
yeah, just to kind of give people an idea of just how closely people are watching him this season. I think I've had at least two or three texts, a couple emails this week asking. They play a game Saturday at home against Columbus East. It's in the afternoon. I think it's a 2 p.m. game. And I've had people, at least four or five people this week, asking me how to get tickets to the game, because their season tickets were sold out, and they have a waiting list, obviously. And the only way people can get tickets basically is if the opposing school, who I think it gets like an allotment of 300 or 500 a game, turn any back in. And so there's been a couple of games where they've turned tickets back in, and New Albany will like tweet out the information, you know, tickets are going to go out on sale at this time, the return tickets. And these are like not good seats. These are like, I mean, it's not a huge gym. It's 4,000 seats, but you know, these are like seats in the corner or seats up top, and people line up to get these, like right when they go on sale, like they have to be there before the JV game. And these are like, you know, people have to, these are games on Friday nights a lot of times. So people have to work. They have, and these tickets are going on sale like right after school ends. And so people are like leaving work early. They're making special arrangements for people to get over there and get tickets just for a glimpse at this kid. And like, you know, you pay whatever, $5 to get in, you get a great night of entertainment. And I think it's been great for high school basketball in general in Indiana, because there's this year in particular, I think is going to be a fascinating state tournament. I talk about this every week on Kent Sterling. It's funny. He'll have me on and we'll talk about IU for 5 minutes, and then we'll just start talking about like New Albany and Floyd Central and Jeff. And it's been awesome for high school basketball. And I hope it's something that continues in the future. I hope Indiana continues to produce great talent. I think one of the biggest criticisms I can give of, you know, Tom Crean's Indiana program towards the end was they haven't had a Mr. Basketball come to IU since Cody Zeller. I mean, you talk about kind of losing the state. You know, I think one of the keys to recruiting well in Indiana is you got to get the best players from Indiana coming to IU consistently. And I think a lot of reasons, in a lot of ways, that's why Romeo Langford is so symbolic for Archie, if he can get him. You know, if he's able to take this job and a year later get not only a Mr. Basketball, but a talent like this, you know, a top five player in the country, to come, I think it signals a lot of great things for the program in the future.
No doubt about it. Well, I've got some other burning questions, but I think that's probably the best spot to end on. That was a great discussion of Romeo.
Yep.
So let's end there.
Hopefully some more discussions to come in the next couple of months. We'll see, though.
Yes. Yes, and many into the offseason and next season as well, depending on what decision he makes. But we will patiently await that. We will also patiently await Indiana, Michigan State. I imagine we'll have two games before we talk again. So next time we're on here, we can recap Michigan State and Rutgers and look ahead to the rematch against Minnesota that'll be coming after that. And then the schedule eases up a little bit. You don't have any more of these, you know, back-to-backs, and you've got games against Rutgers and Minnesota and Illinois and Iowa. So you've got some winnable games there. So hopefully the Hoosiers can put forth a good performance Saturday, give themselves a chance to win, and then go on a little run here to build some momentum as we close out February. Alex, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
You know, back to back for you too. You're covering Ohio State last night, podcast on the Brink today. So thanks for the time, man.
No problem. Thanks everybody for listening.
Yep. We will talk to you all next week. All right. So at the beginning of the episode, I told you about Blue Apron. And again, we have an affiliate relationship with them. So if you've been thinking about trying Blue Apron, go to insidethehall.com/blueapron. You can get $30 off of your first meal order, and we'll get a commission as well. So again, it's a great way to support the show, a great way to get started with Blue Apron at a discount and kind of give it a try. And in advance of doing this, I decided to try it out myself. My wife and I have talked about doing it, and so we finally decided to start doing it here in the new year. And I would say so far, so good. We've done four meals. I've enjoyed four of them. My wife, she didn't necessarily like the one that we had last night as much. We had a Cajun kale quiche, and she's just not a big quiche person, so that's really why. She actually said it tasted pretty good for a quiche, but she said in the future, we shouldn't use our Blue Apron meals for a quiche, which I think is probably right. But you know, some of the other meals that we had seared grass-fed steaks with sweet chili glazed vegetables. We had ancho orange chicken with kale rice and roasted carrots. And obviously, it's great to, you know, look at the menu, choose what you want to eat, and then you get this box. We get our orders on Friday afternoon. This box comes on Friday afternoon, and everything is in there. All the ingredients are portioned out correctly. There's really easy instructions. And so it makes cooking and preparing these meals a pretty simple process, and it's fun. And you know, look, if you just want to have a good meal and eat it simply, Blue Apron is great. If you are kind of an amateur chef, and I would barely call myself an amateur chef, I mean, I enjoy cooking, I'm not that great at it, but I do like learning kind of new cooking techniques. And so that to me has been the most fun part about this. You know, like making the kale rice, like that's not something I'd thought about before, but my young daughter, she's about 18 months old. She loves eating that rice. And so now, you know, by going through and doing this, I learned how to do that. Now I can go make it on my own. So that's kind of been, you know, a secondary or a tertiary bonus. So anyway, just give it a try. Check out insidethehall.com/blueapron. They've been around for a while. So, you know, pretty trustworthy. The the boxes with the meals come, you know, really reliably. Everything in there has been fresh, has tasted really good, and they have a lot of great options. So you get a few options you can choose from. You can get them whatever day of the week that you want. So they really try and tailor the experience to you. They try to do it in a sustainable way, which is nice. So yeah, just that's my pitch. Give it a try, insidethehall.com/blueapron. And if you live anywhere near a Costco, Costco actually has a nice little gift certificate deal. I think for like $100, you can get $150 worth of Blue Apron meals. And so we did that. And so it was actually a way to get even better value for our money. And that still works with the $30 off that you get when you go to insidethehall.com/blueapron. So just a little pro tip there. All right. That's it. Give it a try. And when you do, let me know. Send me a note at Assembly Call or email me, jared@assemblycall.com, and I'd love to know how it goes for you. insidethehall.com/blueapron. Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. To get more from me and from Alex, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com for complete coverage of Indiana University basketball. If you liked this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend or family member who loves IU basketball as much as you do. You can also support the show by leaving a rating and review on iTunes, which helps us get the word out to more IU fans like yourself. We will be back next week with a new episode. Until then, as always, go Hoosiers.